Occasionally, I don't mind like DuckDuckGoing all the backstory after I watch it, but you don't always have that kind of time, you know?
Right. Yes, for sure. Totally. Totally. Speaking of not always having that kind of time, presto changeo. Son of a gun.
There's only so much time to review The Mandalorian Season 2.
Oh my.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kyle Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, trying to make today make sense as best we possibly can.
I am Molly Wood. It is Thursday, which usually means that by now our shell is feeling hollowed out. And indeed, that is the case. Well, I'm just going to own it this week. Hollowed out shell Thursday.
Yeah.
Wow.
Huh. You know, it's funny. As you say that, I'm realizing I've chosen the wrong news facts. I mean, I'm going to go with it because I'm committed and I got tape and I'm there. But that's not the thing that's hollowing out my shell. But we'll get there when I get to my thing. So whatever.
Me neither. And I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
We probably, some version of the same thing is hollowing out our shells. God. What is happening in this country? Seriously. Okay. Yeah. All right. Keep it together. Come on. Snap out of it, Wood. So on Kai's recommendation, I rarely listen to The Daily, but I did. You clued me into this story that I'm surprised is still not just like plastered everywhere. I know it's hard to focus because so many things are happening, but I did go and listen to the story in The Daily about that recapped reporting from The New York Times about how the Trump administration declined to purchase additional doses of the Pfizer vaccine when it was in development, but looking very promising. And what you hear in that podcast is that it wasn't particularly like, it wasn't that we didn't have the money. It was the kind of thing where Pfizer offered a deal that basically said, you know, you can secure the rights to buy an additional 100 million doses, but you only have to pay if it works. Like there was no, you know, financial incentive. The reporter, as New York Times reporters tend to be, is pretty careful about this, Sharon Lafreniere, but it is hard not to imagine, given what we know about the politics of the virus, right? The politics of everything related to the virus, given how, in fact, forcefully Pfizer, when these vaccine results were announced, said we absolutely were not a part of Operation Warp Speed. Because you hear also in the podcast that, that when Pfizer was offered the opportunity to take funding from the U.S. government, they said, no, thank you. This is, we do not want to get involved in the politics of it with the government oversight we think would slow us down. And we don't need the money. we'll go our own way. Yeah. Frankly, it is hard not to imagine that that is a part of the reason why this administration said no thank you to those additional 100 million doses and why we will now in this country find ourselves in the position most likely of falling off of a cliff of vaccine availability.
Yep.
Running out of available doses, having to wait months. And I'm going to go ahead and remind everybody again that we're losing now, this week, on some days, more than 3,000 people a day.
Mm-hmm.
A day. And you have a whistleblower saying, you know, I was instructed to delete emails as a part of this response by the CDC director. You have all of the politics that are wrapped up in this. And like, there's a lot of stuff that people are not ready to say right now. But when the history of this thing is written, it's going to be said.
Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly right. I think the histories are going to be amazing.
This is bad.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Yeah, I saw two items in there for you. Is this the same one? Or were you?
I took out the other one.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
I just couldn't decide until 10 minutes before, but that was it. That's all I got.
Okay. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So, so I will say here that the thing that's really hollowing out my shell today is the whole lawsuit in the Supreme Court by the state of Texas against the four states at issue in the election that voted for Joe Biden that the president doesn't like. And then the state of Texas said, oh, no, we're going to sue. And I don't want to get into the whole original jurisdiction thing and all of this. But the thing that really got to me today was 106 members of the House of Representatives who belong to the Republican Party of the United States, the grand old party, have joined as friends of the court, if you will, on the side of Texas. to throw out the elections in Pennsylvania and Georgia and two other states that escape me now. It's probably Michigan and someplace
Michigan
else.
Michigan and Ohio.
On the grounds that Donald Trump didn't win. And that to me is just bananas. And the idea that sitting members of the national legislature would do this, it's just beyond my comprehension. And that's what's hollowing out my shell. But I didn't pick that, so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but I am going to do this. So Molly had a thing, you had a thing about the vaccine and what a bummer it is. And I've got a little bit of good news about the vaccine and about who makes it. And it's in response to a thing we talked about last week, which is the reluctance on some people of color in this economy, black and brown people specifically, to take this vaccine because of the wrongs that have been done them in the past in public health in this country. And none of that is deniable, right? You just Google Tuskegee and it's all there. Anyway, so Anthony Fauci, who is the doctor to the entire country right now, was on a Zoom call today with the president of Howard University and a guy who works in public health in Washington, D.C. His name is Ambrose Lane, and Wayne Frederick is the president of Howard. And they were talking about this reluctance on the part of some black people in this country and also brown people and minorities generally to not want to take this vaccine because of that history. And Mr. Lane, who works, again, in public health in Washington, D.C., said, look, Dr. Fauci, I want you to talk about that for a minute. And here's what he said.
Well, I think the example that you gave, Ambrose, is an excellent example. The very vaccine that's one of the two that has absolutely exquisite level, 94% to 95% efficacy against clinical disease and almost 100% efficacy against serious disease that has shown to be clearly safe. That vaccine was actually developed in my institute's Vaccine Research Center by a team of scientists led by Dr. Barney Graham and his close colleague, Dr. Kizmekia Corbett, or Kizzy Corbett. Kizzy is an African-American scientist who is right at the forefront of the development of the vaccine. So the first thing you might want to say to my African-American brothers and sisters is that the vaccine that you're going to be taking was developed by an African-American woman. And that is just a fact. I mean, that is a fact. And I think that's some of the things that people don't fully appreciate.
Number one, I played that just so we could hear Anthony Fauci, the 80-year-old white grandfather, say, my African-American brothers and sisters. I mean, love
seriously.
That right?
That
come on. That was worth
delightful.
The whole price of admission right there.
But this
woman, this, right? But this woman, she's 34 years old. She's a black
badass woman.
She's on the cutting edge of science, and she's developing this vaccine. And it's important that people know that she's a black woman. And that's it. That's why I wanted to play that tape, because that's important. People need to know that.
Awesome. And actually, after yesterday's episode, in which I referred to that MIT article, someone on Twitter, I love Twitter, sent me a link to a thread by Professor Akiko Iwasaki, a very long, very medical thread on why, basically, despite those initial findings with respect to potentially the vaccine not being as effective in people of Black or Asian genetic ancestry, she said the bottom line and a whole bunch of stuff about lymphocytes and unique receptors that detect specific features of a pathogen, and there are pictures and stuff. She was like, bottom line, there is no cause for alarm. She said, I hear you. It is a concern. There definitely needs to be more representation in clinical studies. But she said, there's little need to worry about Blacks and Asians not being protected by vaccines.
Okay. All right.
So
good.
We're gonna do our best to update our information as we get it.
Yeah. But that's an important thing. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, Yale Medicine professor.
There we go. Dogs. Saw a tweet today by Dr. Benjamin Katz. He's a PhD student at Hebrew University in clinical psychology. And he was doing some research about I don't even know what. And then he came across this other research and he tweets in all caps, I just came across the most adorable peer-reviewed research I've ever seen and had to make a thread about it. Have an amazing weekend. And so here's the deal. It's a study. The official title of the study is Visual Discrimination of Species in Dogs, Canis Familiaris. And it's a study of how dogs can understand what they're looking at, and do they recognize, in one part of this study, other dogs as dogs, and how do they recognize other dogs as dogs? And so they did this whole experiment where they put a dog on a line in a room, and on one monitor on the other side of the room was a not dog, and then on the other monitor was a dog. And if the dog went to the dog, he got a treat, and if the dog went to the not dog, he didn't get a treat. And it's all about how dogs know that other dogs are dogs. It's just the most amazing thing. I love it.
And it is the greatest thread, too, because not only did someone do this research, which is awesome, and Benjamin Katz is basically like every single one of us has chosen the wrong career path except for the authors of this study. His summary of all of it, of it's like there are so many all caps, and then there's so many, you know, very good girl in general, but Bounty is not good at identifying other dogs by pick. It is so funny.
It's just great.
So charming. And you know this was like the literal perfect thing today because I think Kai and I arrived. Yep. He arrived like 1 second before me in the lineup to put this link in.
Doc, yeah. Beach to it.
And I was like, it's a, and I thought that it, I sincerely believed it was the only good thing on the internet today because, man, am I with you about not only the 106 House Republicans, but the 17 state attorney generals.
That's great.
Because, guys, this is a big, bad deal. But I also then found this absolutely delightful story by way of our random Slack channel. It's just called Random here at work.
Yes.
And it's about how the children's musical act, the Okie Dokie Brothers, who are from Minnesota, were nominated for a Grammy. And they asked the Grammy Awards organizers to remove their names from the nominations list because they said it is not sufficiently inclusive. They said you cannot put us in a category of children's performers, particularly when, you know, if you're performing for children, one assumes you are all about kindness and respect and other people mattering and equal rights. And they said every single person, every single group on this list is white. And only one nominee is a woman. Everybody else is white guys. And we cannot, in good conscience, take this slot. And they said, thanks, but no thanks, Grammy Committee.
Yeah.
I know.
That's cool.
I know. So good for them. Cool. Yeah. Yep. Look at that. Point legit on. Made me smile. Boom. It's not just dogs, although it's a lot of dogs. Like, dogs.
All right. I would just like to say, for having started out pretty hollowed out, we ended on an up note. I'm just going to say that.
I mean, the structure of this show is nothing short of absolute genius, I got to say. Like, bravo us.
Brilliance.
Bravo.
Brilliance.
Peabody Award our is in own the mail. Selves.
Oh, my goodness. All right. We're going to leave on that high note. Back tomorrow for Economics on Tap, the YouTube live stream as well. 3:30 out here in the Pacific, 6:30 East Coast. Those of you in the middle of the country, figure out your own time zone. I don't even know. In the meanwhile, do the newsletter subscription thing, would you? This week, we've got some stuff on interior design and how the pandemic actually might change home layouts and fixtures, stuff like that. Did happen after the Spanish influenza of 1918. So there's some cool design history we dive into. I believe radiators will be a part of that. There was a cool article in Bloomberg about that. Sign up for that newsletter at marketplace.org/newsletters.
So
my old house
great.
Had those radiators, man.
I know. My college apartment did, too.
There you go.
Snow used to come in the open window and then melt on the radiator.
Right.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters with all of that good stuff in them and the Make Me Smart skill on your smart device.
Charlton Thorpe engineered the program today. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Donna Tam. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves, neither of whom today, I believe, are questioning their life choices participating in this podcast. I think they're reasonably happy.
I think they might not be.
You know.
I don't think. Hopefully. Why would they? What's there to object to? We had dogs.
We had dogs. Science.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work. while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.